Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Nikki Haley was all apoplectic today. Angry over the fact that Vice President Kamala Harris and Labor Secretary Marty Walsh laid out their plan to increase union membership in the federal workplace and make the federal government like, you know, kind of a model employer, you know, like doing the right things, giving people collective bargaining rights, having some voice on the job, a little dignity, a little respect. Bridge way too far for the former UN ambassador and governor of South Carolina. She came out and said Kamala Harris's union drive is nothing more than a power grab that will crush worker freedom and empower labor bosses. One, I don't know any labor bosses, but, you know, nice job, Nikki. She then said when she was governor, we made sure workers' voices were heard and that liberal union metal man couldn't intimidate them. I guess I'm missing the how they protected the workers in South Carolina, because the stories I hear, not very good. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on maybe you got a thought on the idea of expanding labor rights on the federal level. And, well, what's going on with Striketober? I've asked Alex Press to come talk with us. Alex is a staff writer over at Jacobin Magazine. She does some of the best labor reporting in the country. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, happy as always to talk to you, Rick.
So what do you think about Nikki Haley, who said once she takes her pointy shoes and kicks unions when she was talking to the Walmart people?
I think I'm in agreement with your comments that the stories I've heard about working class people in South Carolina is they don't feel very free. I mean, that worker freedom line is always the go-to, right? That's this individual freedom that ends up in just individual desperation. I would love if Kamala Harris was really pushing a union drive. Doesn't sound like that's exactly what's going on. She just wants some basic standards for the federal workplace. So by all means, that's the least that the federal administration should be doing.
No, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I said from the start is I would love to see more people joining and forming unions. But at the federal level, it seems almost like a no-brainer, especially given the last administration, that people should be clamoring for union rights.
Yeah, definitely. But beyond that, I don't have specific comments. I've been very busy dealing with this uptick in the strikes.
No, as we all have been. Look, there's so many going on and there's so much happening. Like the John Deere strike, I just found out today that a judge has issued an injunction to limit the number of people who are able to be on the picket line. And I said, you know, my position is not a good. Take all the workers off the picket line. This is where activists and the community should be lining up and marching up and down that street all day long and all night.
I know that's definitely part of the conversation of what's happening right now, that there is a mobilization being planned and organized. And I hope that it is, you know, I hope it is wildly successful. That's what used to happen, right, is that people would flood the strike lines and they would keep those lines strong. And that's exactly, you know, if we're going back to militant workplaces and we're going back to private sector strikes, I think we should go back to the whole community fighting for the workers who are fighting for them, too.
No, ultimately, you know, and this is one of those things that I've feared for a long time and been talking about for a long time. I don't want to have to, certainly don't want my children to have to rehash the fights of the 20s and 30s. But it seems like we're right back in that moment, because the pendulum of power in the workplace has decidedly shifted to the employer class. And workers, I think, finally realizing that they didn't have the power they thought. And now, you know, labor seems to be the new in right now.
Yeah, it's the trend that you and I were there before it got big. You know, I think it's important, you know, I don't want to damper anyone's enthusiasm, but I do think it's important to talk about, like, people are saying strike wave, right? Striketober, great word. You know, the strike wave, part of it is there is an uptick in private sector strikes right now. It's far fewer public sector strikes than usual, largely because of the pandemic, right? People are focused on negotiating safe returns to work and things like that. But, you know, like if IATSE, which is the main thing I've been writing about for the past couple weeks, if IATSE ratifies that contract that they got a tentative agreement, doesn't strike, you know, if the Kaiser Permanente unions don't strike, we aren't talking about, you know, a serious strike wave. That said, I think Kaiser Permanente is heading that direction. But I don't want to overstate things. You know, strike waves in the past, we were talking millions of workers, and right, we are far from that. That said, what's significant about this right now is that in the private sector, that's where these strikes are happening. That's significant. And they're not all in one industry, right? We have Kellogg's and we had Nabisco. We have Heaven Hill Distillery in Kentucky. Those are all food manufacturing. Then we have these healthcare workers, Kaiser Permanente, heading to a strike, as well as all these nurses in Massachusetts and New York are on strike. Different sector, right? IATSE, film and TV workers, that's a different sector. So that is good, right? That it means that it's a broad feeling among unionized private sector workers that they're going to fight back. And then the flip side is that we're seeing this quitting going on, especially in retail, hospitality, and healthcare. So the Department of Labor put out these numbers that showed that almost 3% of the American workforce quit their jobs in August, which is sort of the flip side, right? If you have a union, you can stay and fight. If you don't have a union, you're on your own. You can ask for more, and if your boss says no, well, you can leave. And so people are leaving, and that is both encouraging, right? People are not willing to put up with these horrible jobs, but also a reflection of weakness, right? That they can't do anything but leave. And so I think those are two sides of the same coin, and all of it does reflect a willingness to sort of leave or put up a fight, which is encouraging, right? But it's how do we lock in those gains and build on those that momentum?
No, I've been saying almost the exact same thing, because we're seeing a lot of strikes happening. But understand, you know, in the private sector, you're just a tick over 6% of the entire workforce. So the other 94%, 93 point whatever percent, they don't have the ability to strike. And just like you said, they've got to take it or leave it. And a lot of them right now, fortunately, and look, I guess it has a lot to do with that there are a lot of jobs right now that people can go to. They're choosing to leave. And that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And you're seeing that, you know, everybody's wages on average have gone up a little bit since last year. And people who switched, their wages are going up even a little bit more. But that said, think about what that actually means that's happening, right? I mean, I write about Amazon work all the time. And so a lot of these people, I mean, Amazon has been on a hiring spree. We're talking about people in lower paid food service jobs who are leaving, going to Amazon. Their wages are going to double, but that job still sucks. Right. So there's still so much more work to be done.
No, I like how you're very blunt about that. That job still sucks.
Famously, right? An Amazon warehouse job. I mean, of any job, it's like sort of your Joe Schmo, anybody on the street is like, yeah, I've heard that job sucks. Right. So it's fair to say.
But you're right. I've always heard, you know, well, at least I made a little bit more money there, but they didn't stay long. And that is the Amazon model. I mean, I think they're pretty honest about that. They want to churn through people as fast as possible, get them in, use them up a little bit, and then to the curb with you. And then next, that seems to be, well, at least from my perspective, it seems to be the goal.
Yeah, I mean, the question of whether it's the goal or just a side effect of the entire business model is, I think, almost it doesn't matter, because the effect is people's bodies are getting destroyed and they're suffering, and so they're quitting very quickly. That said, it is this interesting moment, because Amazon has been on this hiring spree and they're actually running out of workers to hire, because, again, we're talking about almost 1 million people in this country working for Amazon. And when you have this 150% turnover rate, which is what their warehouses have, you know, and you're going to have several people apply to get one to actually work there, you're talking about like 9 million, 10 million people a year that you need to have applying for jobs. And so it is this interesting question of whether Amazon has actually outpaced the population and what they're going to do. And what we're seeing is they're starting to offer these little benefits. Like, they've definitely raised wages. They're saying they're going to pay for thousands of dollars of college tuition. You know, they're doing anything they can now to get people to stay, except making the job better.
Right.
So I'm not sure it's going to really work.
Oh, it's the same thing in the trucking industry. We keep hearing there's, you know, the supply chain's backed up because we have a shortage of truck drivers. And I go, we don't have a shortage of truck drivers. We have a shortage of people who are willing to do the things that the trucking industry says you have to do. People don't want to be gone weeks at a time. People don't want to live in truck stops and in trucks like animals. They don't want to work in a sweatshop on wheels. Make the job better, make it pay better, and you'll see a glut of people showing up, especially, you know, the conditions. At the end of the day, no matter what job you do, it comes down to wages, hours, conditions. To me, it is that simple.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that this is now a story that everyone's talking about, is that actually so many people are making that evaluation. They're saying, you know what, I have the right to sort of tally up what I think my job is and whether it's worth it. And I can leave, or I can do something else, or I can fight. I actually don't just have to take whatever deal is on offer here.
Now, you brought up IATSE a minute ago, and you know, I looked at some of the things they got, and I think they did all right in their negotiation, and we'll see if the contract gets ratified and signed and all that. I wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, you covered this. What did you think of what they got out of it? Because I'm saying, look, you know, we're seeing all these strikes, and the employer clearly doesn't want to strike. I think they did better because we're seeing other places strike and do better. Or do you have a different view?
I have a little bit of a different view. I mean, the caveat here, so I've been sort of, I think, ahead on this story just because I'd written about it a couple months ago. So I've sort of been talking to these members for months. And I think a lot of them are disappointed in what they got. They were so charged up. They feel extremely strongly about certain things that they need. And I think they'd actually moved beyond the leadership as far as what they were demanding versus what was brought to the table. So some concerns, so the caveat is that no one has seen the final details, right? So IATSE sent out a very abbreviated set of highlighted points, and then last night sent members a slightly longer version of those points, but it's still just a couple bullet points that people are reacting to. So for example, just not to be totally negative, right? I mean, one thing that they did win is the lowest paid members got huge raises.
Right.
Now there's actually a contestation there in that there was a previous discussion about bringing those members up to the higher tier as far as the lowest paid skilled work, which would actually have paid better than these raises they got. So some members even see those raises as a compromise. Other things people are concerned about is especially these turnaround times. That's what's gotten a lot of attention over the past negotiations. Turnaround times, for people who don't know, are when a worker leaves work to when she can be expected to be back. So it's her rest period, right? And in IATSE, you know, the days are 12 or 14 hour days, but sometimes they stretch to 18, 20 hour days. The film industry is crazy like this. So it's very important to the workers that they have enough time off after a shift like that to commute home. I mean, a lot of them are in LA, right? I mean, traffic is crazy. Commute home, eat, see your family and get a good night's sleep and then commute again. They're saying, you know, we already had 10 hours. Most of them did already have that 10. And that's not nearly enough. We want 12. So that is definitely a point of contention among the membership with this contract agreement. They're saying they need more hours than they got. And then the workers who aren't the lowest paid workers, their raises seem to be, at least according to what's come out so far, 3% a year. Inflation is above 5%. So they're saying, why is this an okay contract in a moment when we know we could win big gains and in a moment when we could set a pattern for the other Hollywood unions like the writers and directors? And so there's real sort of dissension in the ranks on this one. And I would just tell people that it's not a done deal, right? We call it a tentative agreement for a reason. It's because unions are democratic institutions.
Sure.
And it's always up to the members to decide if they're going to ratify that. So IATSE's process is pretty long. Last time it looks like it took around 2 months to get to a ratification vote.
Oh, wow.
So it'll be, discussed for a while.
So do you see this being voted down then? Because, you know, because I had read some of the bullet points, like, oh, hey, there's some good stuff in here. The 3% raise, thoughts?
I'm not one for predictions, right? But that, and you know, I think the truth is that it's very hard to vote down this contract. It's going to take a lot of work. Again, it's hard to say how much dissension there is. On social media, it's like overwhelming. Everyone says they hate this contract,
right?
But social media is very self-selecting, right? Last contract, there was one local, which is one of the biggest locals covered under this contract, Local 700, the Editors Guild. They voted against ratification. They were the only local to vote against it last time. So I think one thing people are looking for is what is their elected leader. Kathy Repola is her name. She's like a respected kind of dissenter within IATSE. Is she going to recommend ratification or not? And I've sort of heard some mixed things about that. And so their membership meeting is upcoming, where members will hear more in depth and talk Q&A. So I would just say I'm waiting to see. I think it's unlikely, but the thing I think about is that the John Deere workers, you know, they didn't have elected leaders or formal leaders that were against that contract. They didn't have a whole lot of organization, but they voted it down overwhelmingly and decided to strike. So I would never say never.
No, I'm with you on that. But you brought up John Deere, and, you know, like I said at the beginning here, you get a federal judge, you know, putting an injunction on the picket line. The law is decidedly against working people. Like I said, the pendulum has swung. This is a moment where a major comprehensive labor law reform is desperately needed, and yet I don't see us anywhere close to getting the kind of things that need to be done to help, you know, help people on the picket line to be able to negotiate and fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. Is this just another one of those things that, you know, we see it and we go, it is what it is, and move on? Or could this be one of those things that people look through and go, that's not right, and we want to change it?
Well, I would hope people are trying to change it, right? I mean, there's certainly, you know, several levels of change that could happen. Obviously, the highest level is the PRO Act, that comprehensive labor law reform bill. But, you know, the odds of that passing are very slim. That said, I don't think people should throw up their hands on this. I do think on the other, this sort of other end of change, if we see a workplace like John Deere, where it's like everyone in that area has a family member or a friend who works there, what we can see at that level of the community in the area would be an incredible shift of politics, right? I mean, a strike at an employer like that offers the possibility of political transformation. So if you have an entire community mobilized in the way that I'm seeing videos and photos come out from those picket lines, but it's hard to sustain that kind of energy, right? So if that does sustain, I think we do see some sort of possibility for real political demands coming out of an experience like a 10,000 person strike.
Yeah, and we saw Tom Vilsack, the Secretary of Agriculture, show up on the picket line. And my first thought was, where were you during the Obama years? And then, wait a second, where was Obama during the Obama years? Never mind. Where were the comfortable shoes? Maybe he's got time now. Maybe we could get him out on the picket line if he could dig up those comfortable shoes.
I don't think I would trust Obama on the picket line. I mean, when I think of him as far as recent intervention in a labor action, it's him getting on the phone with LeBron James and during the NBA brief strike that happened during the finals last year and telling LeBron they had to start playing basketball again. So I don't want Obama near a picket line. Yeah. He's a charmer, and I don't need him convincing workers to go back to work.
Yeah, no, that is an excellent point. And you know, I look at this, and had we gotten something better than the Employee Free Choice Act that he promised me we would get years ago, we probably wouldn't be in the mess we're in now. But you know, the fight is what it is. I wanted to get your last thoughts on what's going on at Kellogg. Clearly you've got, 1,400 workers in four locations across the country. What are you hearing here?
Yeah, I mean, at Kellogg, as you said, it's all of the cereal plants, right? It's a similar issue as so many of these other strikes, like at Nabisco, the issues at IATSE. It's a lot of them have been working, 12 to 16 hour days, 7 days a week with mandatory overtime. They say that the company wants a two-tier system, right? A two-tier contract. They had previously agreed to that and it was framed as a temporary measure.
Right.
And now they're pushing to pretty much make it permanent, right? To lift the cap on those temporary employees. So they're trying to weaken the union and divide it. The workers right now are still on strike. And the fact that it's all of them, I think, is a good thing. Kellogg has made huge profits. So the case is pretty clear there. And the fact that, their union has recent strike experiences is encouraging, right? The Frito-Lay strike in Nabisco. But I have no idea I can't predict how it's going to go. I mean, we know that every week out on strike, it gets harder.
There you go. Alex, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the fantastic work over there at Jacob & Magazine. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Good stuff, Alex Press. Make sure you check out her work. We'll make sure we get links out on social media. You can follow her along. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.